I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 12th of December. Independent Lens is offering us an absorbing look at the playwriting to stage process. The film is From Page to Stage and is going to premiere on PBS this coming Monday. It follows two extraordinarily talented young playwrights. Why are they writing plays? What are they writing about? How does their life experience inform their work? How were they discovered? We'll learn about the rehearsal process, the rewrite process for the playwrights, the staging, the directors, the journey from unknown to Broadway. I had a chance to view the film this morning, and I hope many of you will have a chance to see the program on Monday evening. It's really so well done. And if you're at all interested in theater, you will find it completely absorbing. We have two guests with us this hour. Robert Levy is director and producer of Playwright From Page to Stage. His film, Billy Strayhorn, Lush Life, became the first show in Broadway history to receive the Emmy for Best Documentary, a Peabody Award, and the Writers Guild Award for Best Documentary Screenplay. His film, Duke Ellington, Reminiscing in Tempo, was on the PBS series American Experience. That received an Emmy. He's done a whole lot. I'm just giving you a sampling here. He was also producer on the Academy Award-winning documentary Scared Straight. Robert, thank you so much for being with us. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's an honor to be, an honor to be here, Kathleen.
Well, it's delightful to have you here. And we're also delighted to have Rajiv Joseph with us. He's winner of the Steinberg Playwright Award for Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, which is a Pulitzer Prize finalist. He's written several other plays. He wrote the book and was co-lyricist for the Broadway-bound musical Fly, adapted from Peter Pan. Was a writer on the Showtime series Nurse Jackie and co-wrote Draft Day, a 2014 feature drama about pro football. He also served in the Peace Corps, and everybody who's served in the Peace Corps goes on to do something, as far as I can tell, that's public service in some way or really makes a difference in their whole lives. And we'll talk to Rajiv about that. Rajiv, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thank you, and congratulations to both of you on your vast and distinguished body of work. Robert, let's start with you. I just found this to be a fascinating process. First of all, both of these plays are interesting. They're unusual. The playwrights are people who we should be paying attention to, the actors, the subject matter of both of the plays. It made me just want to go right out and see both of them. And what an interesting idea for a documentary, isn't it? Well, you would think so. You put it together.
It is. You know, I was just talking to somebody earlier today that I suppose, and again, your description of my body of work kind of sent shivers down my spine just because it made me feel so privileged to be able to do what I do in this world.
Mm-hmm.
That people had to, I guess, would have been correct in having a perception that I was a biographer, first and foremost. And I did have a history of doing these kind of on-the-shoulder, on-the-run documentaries, like, you know, I worked on Scared Straight, so that would be a very different genre. That would be called cinema verite. I was very fortunate here in being able to do a film that involved the cinema verite, you know, you are there component. But when I met Rajiv and when I met Terrell, I realized I'm standing in the face of some very, very interesting, complex, talented characters. And, you know, my former biographies were done at the end of these incredibly creative men's careers. And I'm talking about Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn. And here I was at the very forefront of these two incredible young men's careers.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it was familiar territory. In another sense, it was, it was an incredible gift to be able to take a journey with them through this process, which is something I was never able to do in earlier work.
And all of the actors, too. What an extraordinary group of people to be filming. So diverse, so talented.
You know, and again, Rajiv and Moises and Terrell and Tina Landau, the director, and Robert O'Hara, the director of the brother-sister plays. I mean, this is what makes a great director, and this is what makes, you know, great theater people. They have the ability to recognize and to choose among this incredible pool of talent that's available in a city like New York or Los Angeles, where actors, you know, basically congregate. And, you know, they chose the best of the best. And that's why these plays work so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Rajiv, let's hear a little bit about your life, because it's a fascinating one, and I know that you say at one point in the film that it has influenced the subject matter of your plays. Your father, Indian, your mother from Ohio, you spent time in the Peace Corps. So you're a guy who has this couple cultures operating, or foreign culture operating at the same time, which is an interesting world to maneuver. And informs what you've done, hasn't it?
Absolutely. You know, my father came to America from India when he was 18 years old, and then met my mother here. And so I grew up, you know, as you know, a, kind of a biracial kid in Cleveland, and I was always, you know, interested in, you know, in kind of both cultures that I came from, you know, and I had the opportunity, you know, because it was important to my father and my parents that that we returned to India, and so I've been there several times since I was a child, and have gotten to know, you know, that country and that culture, you know, fairly well, and so that formed, you know, a lot of who I was from the beginning. But then joining the Peace Corps kind of piggybacked on that, I guess you could say, and that I ended up learning a lot about the country of Senegal that I lived in for 3.5 years, and really kind of took me out of my comfort zone and made me think differently about the world and people in the world and cultures and religions. And that definitely led to a lot of the things that I write about.
Mm. And isn't that true? The phrase you just used, Robert, both of these plays featured in your film take people out of their comfort zone and really take audiences who are, in many cases, quite the opposite of the people who are on stage in terms of their cultural background out of their comfort zones.
It's true. you know, Rajiv's play to me was like a great book, like 100 Years of Solitude. It was this heightened, real, surreal kind of, I guess Moises might have once called it magic realism, among other genres. And I think the themes were so universal in Rajiv's work that it was very easy for people to grasp what he was saying. What I found truly amazing is in Terrell's work, we're dealing with three plays because it's a trilogy, and each play is very different, one from the next one. And he presented them mostly in repertory, but one night each week they would be done as one complete three-hour play with a very short intermission. And, you know, the audience has just sat through those and were completely spellbound, even though they were very, very dense, lush, mm-hmm. and often surreal journeys into his world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an extraordinarily compelling person, and his life story is so dramatic as well. Rajiv, I think I heard you say during the film that you saw an article, I don't know if it was in a newspaper or someplace, about after the fall of Baghdad, people guarding the zoo, American soldiers guarding the zoo, and that was the idea for this play, was it? Was that it?
Yes, Kathleen. I was in graduate school at the time at NYU, and it was right at the time, you know, kind of at the first 2 months of the war, when, you know, the Iraq war was dominating the newspapers and the media, and there was a lot to think about. You know, it was a troubling time, and but of all the things I read and was trying to kind of make sense out of, the thing that jumped out to me the most was this small, tiny article in the back of the New York Times about this event that had happened, where these soldiers had been guarding the zoo because the zoo had been partially blown open by some bombs, and one of the guards was attempting to feed a tiger who was starving in a cage. And the tiger mauled his hand, and the other soldier was forced to shoot and kill the tiger. And something about that scene really touched me and moved me, and it seemed so surreal and bizarre. And so it kind of compelled me to start writing this play.
Mm-hmm. Which you say is not a political play.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I wouldn't say it's political. I think that many plays are political, regardless of their, you know, necessarily like the nuts and bolts of their content. I think it's a political play, but also I would argue that it's not necessarily a war play. but it's actually more of a ghost story.
The differences between putting together a film and writing a play, Robert, as you looked at these playwrights and from the beginning to going to Broadway with Rajiv's play, did you see anything that was similar here, or is there something very different about the process?
I'm not sure I completely grasp the question.
In the creative process, did you find that the creative process, because you edit with film, and although a lot of this is having people, the directors and the actors, go through various stages, but do you feel in a way that you're creating a play too? Is some of the creative process the same, that you have that you're rewriting it as you're doing it, that it has a story that has to be told that you've put down on paper in some way before you start filming, or is it something that just unfolds when you have the camera in front of you?
No, that's a great question. In the form that's called cinema verite, which is basically, you know, the you're a fly on the wall, just capturing everything. It's you don't know what your story is going to be till everything's over, basically. And even once you've done all the filming and you're sitting in an editing room somewhere, you're then faced with maybe three very distinct ways of working. You can try and script it, which sometimes doesn't do justice to the material because you're imprinting your own vision of the story onto the material. You can just basically follow the chronology and try and do the logical editing that would unify all the pieces. In this case, the story had to tell itself. It's a kind of weird alchemy. It's really hard to explain. I'd never been involved in an editing schedule before where the material really needed to speak. You know, we knew what the interesting pieces were, but assembling them was a tremendous challenge. And I tried at one point, once we had a basic structure down, I said, aha, I had an aha moment. Now Robert, the director, puts the writer's cap on. You know, I've gotten those awards before. I'm a decent writer. Now I will write the structure one step further into what exists right now. And so I gave my editor the paper cut that had my repositioning and some writerly things there. We put it together, we shook the dice, and it didn't make any sense anymore. So I said, you know what, let's just throw that out, let's go back to working the way we did. And it was very interesting because, you know, PBS is our partner and likes to be involved in looking at the various stages of editing. So we showed them cut after cut after cut, and it was always, okay, I see what you're doing. Okay, I see what you're doing. And then literally from the third, okay, I see what you're doing, to the fourth was like, oh my God, you've captured it. You've brought it to life. The material's really speaking. There's not one real word of narration in the film, and every film I've ever made before was basically narrated by a narrator who basically filled in gaps, filled in continuity, took us from Act 1 into Act 2, right, launched Act 3. We knew we were not going to be able to use any of those devices here, and I can't explain to you how we went from I see what you're doing to oh my God, you got it.
Right. And the amazing thing, Robert, is that you're telling some complicated stories here. You're not only capturing what the plays are, you're capturing the other playwright, Terrell's life, which is extraordinary, and you're capturing some fairly complicated themes in terms of actors and actresses and what they're dealing with and how they're dealing with an audience and how this is material that people don't normally see on stage. And you're doing two of these plays, so it's really complex.
It is. And at one point, you know, we tried to start off with three plays. And right off the bat, that just wasn't going to work. And we started doing two plays, and it took a lot of canoodling to make those two plays work with synchronicity, even though they don't have anything to do with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of the reasons the Billy Strayhorn film was able to, you know, be received with the wonderful reviews and critiques that it did is that the players were allowed to speak for themselves, and they were all dignified, articulate, insightful, candid, probing people. They were all either friends, colleagues, historians of Billy Strayhorn. Here, you know, we let the actors talk, we let Rajiv talk, we let the directors talk, and I was so fortunate in having everybody give me that same from the heart honesty, no holds barred responses to the questions that we were asking in the interviews. So essentially, they tell the story.
Mm-hmm. Rajiv, what was remarkable, well, that you're such a young person and 1,000 plays are seen by a producer in a year and yours made it through, but you were also in the process, I found astounding, of rewriting this play while it was in rehearsal.
Yeah.
How come?
Well, that, to me, is a very normal thing. It's part of the life of the playwright, I believe, is that, you know, when you've written a play, you've written a play that a theater has agreed to do, but now with working with a director and with actors for several weeks, you really have, it's the first time you have a chance to actually see how this work works, see how people are actually, you know, bringing it to life on stage. And when that happens, it's not always what you thought. And so I think I've never, ever been involved with a play where I haven't done extensive rewriting during the rehearsal process.
Mm-hmm.
Because questions arise from actors and directors and through myself as I'm starting to see it. I compare it to a work of music. If a composer sits down and writes, a symphony, but hasn't heard an orchestra play it, the first time an orchestra plays it, it may not sound exactly how they thought it would.
Oh.
And that's exactly what happened to me. And, you know, I also realized that, you know, this opportunity that I had in Los Angeles to begin this play was a very great one. I was with a fantastic theater, the Center Theater Group in Los Angeles, and I had the amazing opportunity to work with Moises Kaufman, who's one of the great theater directors in the world. And my relationship with Moises, my relationship with these actors changed my life and certainly changed the life of the play. And so it was, the play became better. It became stronger. And I think it would be foolish of any playwright to stand in a rehearsal process and be resistant to changing the play if it needs to be changed.
But you didn't even know the ending of the play until a couple days before the curtain went up.
Oh, I didn't know the ending of the play after the curtain went up. We had a different ending every night of our preview performance.
Did you really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, we would tell the audience prior to the play, an announcement would be made that I was still working on it, and there would be some scenes where actors would come out holding pages because they had just been handed them.
Oh, my.
Which was true. And that's also what previews are for. I mean, you, generally in theater you have anywhere between, you know, 1 and 2 or a couple of weeks of preview performances that are the same thing. They're fully paid, you know, people come to see the play, but if they're actually prior to the opening night, and it gives the actors and the writer a chance to kind of see really what, you know, what's working. Because as I said, the rehearsal process, you see a whole new aspect of the play, and then you see a whole new aspect of the play once you put it in front of an audience. And you realize that some things work and some things don't. And so, but yeah, it was a very stressful, exciting, crazy experience to be working on that ending.
Yeah. Well, it obviously worked. It really worked. We're going to welcome phone calls. I don't know if this is a kind of conversation you can call. Well, let me give you some ways you might be able to call. I know you haven't seen the film yet. I urge you to see it. It's on PBS Monday. And check your, as they say, local listings to find out what time it will be in your community. But it's done by all these remarkably talented, award-winning people, the director and producer of Playwright from Page to Stage. Robert Levy is with us. He's won Peabody's and Emmys and Writers Guild Award and has done some remarkable work. And he's captured two films, one of the film, two plays, and playwrights, young playwrights, who won competitions for Best Young Playwright. And it's amazing how many plays are submitted every year. So these two young people were having their works performed by very, very outstanding theater companies. And in Rajiv's case, his play wound up going to Broadway, which is also a story. The play is Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, which was also a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Rajiv is with us and Robert is with us. The film is on Monday. But the whole process of theater and some of the questions that we'll begin to ask now is, how is theater relevant today? What do you think is our audience? Do you go to the theater regularly? Do you think that it can make a difference in addressing issues in our times, help us think through issues of our times? We welcome your thoughts. So here's how you reach us. If you'd like, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Page to Stage. It will be on PBS on Monday. And we are speaking with the director and producer of playwright From Page to Stage, Robert Levy, and Rajiv Joseph, who is winner of the Steinberg Playwright Award for Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo. And the film looks at the rehearsal process, the rewrite process, and the route to Broadway of that film, and also another series of marvelous plays as well from Terrell Alvin McCraney, who has been recognized as a playwright who explores the very rich diversity of the African-American experience. And this is a trilogy of plays that have been done one at a time and three at a time. Also a very, very gifted, very, very gifted playwright. Let me ask you, Rajiv, about this whole theater question. I mean, it's an interesting thing in life to, I don't know at what point you decided I'm going to be a playwright, but I would think there aren't very many playwrights, and that the medium that people your age probably attend and are informed more by when they're very young is film. So when did you decide you would be a playwright, and what can you do as a playwright that you couldn't do perhaps as a filmmaker or as in some other artistic endeavor?
Well, my initial ambition was actually to write screenplays. That was what I had grown up on. I had grown up, as you say, you know, watching a lot of movies and was in love with that form. I went to New York University, their Department of Dramatic Writing, for my master's degree to get a degree in screenwriting. But once I was there, some of the classes that we had to take, we had to kind of split our first couple semesters there doing both screenwriting and playwriting because they are somewhat linked. And once I started doing that, I realized that I just liked my playwriting classes a little bit more. And also, it gave me, being in school, I had the opportunity to see a lot of theater. The university was always providing students with either free or discounted tickets to a lot of plays in the area. And all of a sudden, I was seeing some theater that I had never seen before. Seeing a kind of art form that I had never really experienced before at a level and quality that was much different than I anticipated. And I was drawn to it, and I think there's a couple things about playwriting that are unique and that are different from screenwriting. First and foremost, there's something different about live performance as opposed to the screen. And, for example, in the case of Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, the main character is a tiger who stands and dresses like a man. He doesn't wear a tiger outfit. He's standing there in a cage in the first scene of the play, and he's talking directly to the audience about how much it sucks to be a tiger in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in a movie, it would be very difficult to pull this kind of trick off.
Yes, I see your point.
So,
right.
Cinema tends to be a much more literal art, whereas there's no problem in watching this play. I don't think any audience has ever experienced any disconnect in allowing this man standing upright to be a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
There's never a question of like, oh, it doesn't look like a tiger. He can't be a tiger. This is the suspending our belief is part of, you know, watching theater. And there's something about the metaphorical quality of that, of live performance, that I find very appealing. Mm-hmm. And also much more liberating as a writer, because there's a sense that I can kind of do anything, and the art form allows it. And I feel like, I personally feel, you know, that there's some restrictions to screenwriting that playwriting does not have.
Mm-hmm. And what about the impact that it can make on society, Robert, plays? Can they stir people to some kind of activism? Can they be terrifically important reflections of American society at a certain point, or earlier societies at many other points? What did they do for us, and why do we still go to them?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was, I work with a group of people who make films. We've recently had our hand in All Is Lost, the new Robert Redford film. That was produced out of my office. And I was sitting around talking to some of the producers, and, you know, we came to the conclusion that there's only a handful of films that are made each year now that really qualify as films, independent films. The rest are franchises. It's the Die Hard franchise, the whatever, the films that just keep being part one, part two, part three. And I think that a lot of the great writing has moved over, a lot of the great independent film writing has gone to television. Mm. It's been increasingly difficult to find a medium in which the purity of the original form has lasted and continues to be respected as such. I think theater has, to a certain degree, withstood some of the commercialism more than the other forms. I mean, yes, The Lion King will play forever, and Spider-Man is out there too, but I think when you start out to write a play, you are writing from your heart, or you're dealing with an incredibly complicated moral or ethical or just a very interesting intellectual concept or a conflict that you want to explore. I think there's much more emphasis on telling an important story, reaching people's minds and hearts in theater. You know, ironically, I went to film school, and I was also at NYU, like Rajiv, and I would sneak out of my film classes to head over to the theater division just because I knew that there were these stories that were being told and written for the stage that on some level were much more pure and less commercial in form and would, you know, had a greater, there was sort of a, there was a greater resonance. It was a much more personal way of getting a story out.
Mm-hmm. So did you decide to do these two plays? Because it's a fairly unusual, as I was looking at the film, I thought this is really engrossing. And it's very unusual, too. What you've given us is not your run-of-the-mill documentary. I was thinking, well, this is interesting. That would even be the subject of a documentary.
Funny story, I remember when the idea first came to me. It was I was looking at the original scripts that were sent. There were originally seven different plays that were NEA selected plays, best plays of this particular bumper crop. Hmm. And I got the scripts, and they were original writer scripts. There were things crossed out. There were explanations of stage direction, and nothing really made any sense because you're just looking at you know, words on a piece of white paper. So I had to literally go and travel around the country and meet the playwrights and meet the characters and kind of, I had to ruminate a little bit about what, if any, film there was there. It was a very kind of amorphous project in the very beginning, and it didn't take shape for, I hate to say this, maybe a year or two. Mm-hmm. Because I was going around the country filming these different various processes of playwrights bringing their work to table reads with actors playing different parts, and it was very, you know, it was very involving, but at the same point there was absolutely no structure. And I think Terrell and Rajiv were such strong presences that you just got the sense that at the end of the day, their work would really be work that was powerful and realized on stage. And that was the real impetus of just hunkering down and saying, you know what, we're in this for this journey. And it was a four-plus year journey.
Was it? Oh, my. And we want to hear more about Terrell, too. I'll ask you that in a minute. Let's talk about The Road to Broadway, though, because that's where your play ultimately winds up, except not without some reflection as to whether or not that is a good thing or a bad thing. But deep down, a lot of people, the cast and certainly the playwright, must think, you know, I wouldn't mind having my play on Broadway. Is that right, Rajiv? You know, it's got to be a dream for a lot of people.
Oh, of course. It's. I think it's every actor and playwright and director's dream to, you know, to get to the ultimate, you know, stage in American theater. And it certainly was not on my radar, you know, when we began this process. I didn't think that this play had a future on the Broadway stage. But when that became a possibility, it was crazy. I mean, and even as that became a possibility, which is to say that even once some commercial producers expressed their interest in bringing it to Broadway, nothing was a guarantee. I mean, there was so many kind of hoops to jump through, and other necessities to make that a viable option. And the fact that everything came together and it went to Broadway still remains mystifying to me.
Broadway still has a star system that perhaps the play could not have been on Broadway unless you had Robin Williams plays the lead role, we should tell people. Unless you had a star, you have to have a star?
Well, it depends on the play, of course, but I think that, like, you know, for musicals, you don't necessarily need to have a star. A lot of times musicals can have a successful run on Broadway without someone who's a household name. But when you're talking about transferring a little-known play by a little-known playwright that happens to be about the Iraq War,
to
a Broadway stage, you're going to need some boosters there to help that take off. And in this case, it was crucial that the role of the tiger, which is the central role of the play, and the kind of in some ways perfect for a kind of a larger than life figure to play. It was crucial that this role be played by some sort of movie star, somebody that would attract attention and bring in, you know, some box office receipts.
Uh-huh.
And we were very fortunate. The first name that we would float around a lot of names, me and the director and the producers, and sometimes not everybody would agree on who. And, you know, the one of the first names that came up that we all agreed on was Robin Williams. And he was the first actor that we offered the role to. And amazingly, you know, he said yes. And I think it had something to do with Robin is deeply concerned with the plight of U.S. veterans. He's gone to Afghanistan and Iraq several times. He's a deeply political person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something about the play resonated with him on that level.
Yeah, that's quite a story. Let's go to a caller. Mike is calling us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Yes. I was in a play in 1989 called You Are Not Alone. And it went something like, You Are Not Alone.
All right, Mike. I'm not sure where we're going with that. Let's hear the story.
I think that was Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Back from the Dead.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. Robert, let's go to the story that we haven't heard yet, and his story is so captivating, and that's the other playwright, Terrell. Can you tell me a little bit about that award-winning playwright and what you were capturing on film, the plays that he wrote?
Well, specifically about Terrell or about his work?
Well, let's start with Terrell, because it's quite a story.
Terrell is an amazing, amazing human being. You know, he's a very tall, elegant, erudite, energized, enthusiasm-driven person with a heart bigger than he is. He comes from Liberty City, which is a not prosperous community in Miami. He came from a family that was not intact. He had brothers, a sister, and he started out doing street theater. He had the good fortune of going to a school called the New World School, which is a school not unlike the FAME school, the LaGuardia High School for the Arts in New York City. And this woman at the school, I think Patrice Bailey, recognized in him immediately that this was an extraordinarily gifted, talented diamond in the rough that was just begging to burst onto the scene. And they gave him an outlet for his creativity. He was able to be in plays, to work on plays, to develop his writing. He did street theater for these outreach clinics in Miami, and he developed this very unique personal theatrical sensibility in Miami. He completely invented himself, basically. And then he went to DePaul University, studied theater there, wound up in the graduate school, Yale Drama, was able to work with the great, late, legendary playwright August Wilson.
Oh, my.
He was somebody who did work with Peter Brook, the legendary British director who now lives in Paris. And at some point in all of this, you know, these two incredible ladies from the Carter Theater come onto the scene, and they have a friend at Yale, and she says, "You've got to see this young man that we've got here. He can act, he can dance, he can write. He's completely a unique talent." And they visited Yale, they met with him, they extended their theater to him should he ever come up with plays that they could program, and I think the rest became history. They presented the trilogy for the first time. And the ladies I'm talking about are Emily Mann, a legendary playwright, director of and artistic director of the McCarter stage, and Mara Isaacs, who was the producing director there.
It's another great story. Let's go to Patricia in Stoughton. Hi, Patricia.
Hello.
Hi.
I saw the Bengal Tiger on Broadway.
All right.
And, you know, the problem with casting someone well-known was quite evident. I know that Robin Williams was trying to play it straight, but he has a certain delivery. And the audience was laughing at all his lines, even if they were, you know, about a little girl being bombed or whatever he would say. He has this certain delivery, and people would laugh at it. Mm. I found the whole experience very unsettling.
Well, you know, there's something about the play that is unsettling, and part of that is the use of humor in these extreme situations. And I'll be the first to say that it doesn't necessarily appeal to everybody, which is also part of, you know, the reservations that some people had to bringing it to a larger stage. But I will say that when the play was in Los Angeles and it did not have Robin Williams in it, the Tiger still got laughs throughout most of the play. And I don't think it really had as much to do with Robin Williams and people laughing at, you know, kind of whatever he said, but rather that, you know, the Tiger is kind of this, he's this curmudgeon, he's grumpy, and he's trying to make sense of the violence and terror around him. And he does so in this kind of way that is sort of casual, and his language is profane, and his view of humanity is rather profane. And I think the purpose for me as the writer was to actually find the humor in that. And I don't think people, my hope, of course, is that people aren't laughing because they're feeling that the material is flippant or flippantly dealing with the Iraq War, but rather that it's sort of gallows humor. Some of the larger laughs of the play were also by the actor who played Uday Hussein, who has nothing but terrible things to say and awful things to say, and yet somehow people are laughing at it. And again, I hope, of course, it's not the people making light of the situation, but rather in a situation where you can either laugh or cry, you choose the former.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Patricia. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 800-486-8655. You film, Robert, a talkback session for one of Terrell's plays. Let me ask both of you about talkback. Are they important for directors of films? Are they important for playwrights? Are they important for actors? Or is it just a perfunctory thing you do to make everybody feel more involved?
Well, I think I want to be bold and say the phone call that you and Rajiv just fielded was not unlike the experience we had in the talkback session with Terrell, where a very unlikely person in the audience who one might have believed would have been very sympathetic to Terrell's writing and situational drama decided it was totally inappropriate.
Right.
There is no accounting for personal taste. Mm-hmm. There is no accounting for people's individual behavioral codes and the way they perceive situations. I think talkbacks bring forth the inevitability of a filmmaker or a playwright or a singer seeing that something that they've put their heart and soul into doesn't always 100% of the time get met with approval. It's a barometer. It's an unfortunate reality check sometimes when you need support and you have to deal with that. And as artists, it's part of the contract we sign when we join up for a life of putting our creative vision out there, that it just may not be suitable for some people.
Mm-hmm. And Rajiv, what about you as a playwright? When you have audience response, you were rewriting, as you said, as the whole play was going on. Were you particularly attuned to what the audience was, when they were laughing, when they were upset about something, when they really liked something? How do you take that into account?
It's an interesting thing because, you know, you can't really count laughs, and you can't really judge how an entire audience feels about something. I've noticed in my career that oftentimes the quietest audiences, the ones that laugh the least, are sometimes among the most engaged. And it's because they're engaged that they're actually not, you know, responding, you know, vocally. But, you know, my own kind of barometer on this is while I'm watching an early production of a play, I'm conscious of how the play feels to me, and I try to keep as much as I can a sense of is there a moment in this play or a moment in a particular scene where the audience is disengaging, or is there something that I, sometimes if they're laughing at something I don't want them to laugh at, then I have to address that as well. But again, it's hard to hear one audience react to something and say, oh, I need to make a big change. It's more of kind of a personal sense of how a scene or a number of scenes are working.
Mm-hmm. How do both of you take in the element of money when you're doing a documentary like this and when you're doing a play like this? At some point in the movie, one of the Broadway producers says, who would be fool enough to think that they could make money on a play like what you wrote, Rajiv? But obviously they did. But it was also an indication that Broadway is giving us a different kind of fare, and maybe movies are giving us a different kind of fare as well. So how do you do something that may be a little more sophisticated or may not be as song and dancey, that may have uncomfortable themes, and still be able to make a dime?
Well, because I became a playwright, you know, I don't think my first thought was to make money.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Not to say that I didn't want to, but it was, I don't think I've ever written a play thinking this play is going to make me a lot of money. It's simply not what goes into it. And I actually think that there's no way of approaching anything like that, any work of art, be it a screenplay or a play. I mean, a million people write a million screenplays every year thinking it's going to be, you know, the next franchise, as Rob says, and, you know, most of them aren't. There's no accounting for what might make money and what might not. And so I find it not something that really enters my reasoning, particularly when I think about material to write. I kind of concentrate on what are the stories that inspire me or trouble me or make me think longer about them. And, for example, that article about the tiger in the zoo in Baghdad was one of those things that I couldn't get out of my head.
Right.
And that's kind of what propelled me into writing a play.
Robert, how about you?
Well, I think if you look at my contemporaries, people who direct documentary films, you'll see that the documentary films that tend to be commercial and maybe make a lot of money are films by people like Michael Moore, or films that deal with a central conflict, or that maybe detail a disaster or have a sort of a very, very, very intense dramatic engine to propel the story. That hasn't been the trend I've chosen. The films that I make tend to be about people who inspire. They tend to be about people who aspire. They tend to be about people who create. They tend to be about people who have brought light into people's lives. And, you know, dare I say they're feel-good films in the sense that they involve great composers who write timeless bodies of work or playwrights who are at the beginning of careers that are going to clearly be very important careers in creating a body of work for the American theater. So I think, again, I've made a decision that seems to be where my interest is, and it's not necessarily the kind of fare that's going to draw people into movie theaters when they really need to escape from the rigors of their life. It's not escapist by any means. It's an effort to engage.
Playwright, From Page to Stage. It will be shown on PBS this Monday, and we were speaking with the producer-director of the film and one of the playwrights who is featured in this really compelling work, highly recommended. So we'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Robert Levy is our guest. He is the producer and director of this program you'll have a chance to see. I hope you'll see it on Monday. And Rajiv Joseph, one of the playwrights. Did everything really take off for you once you were the winner of this prize and this play went to Broadway? I mean, is that a sign of sure success, or do playwrights have to continue to struggle? You're only as good as what you last did, or what's going to be tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that, you know, any writer or filmmaker or artist, you know, is has to face that. You know, things certainly help, and, you know, as you gain a little bit of name recognition, you know, that things can come of that, and things did, and my career did take off in some ways, but, you know, like one thing has to lead to another, and then that has to lead to something else, and so, I was very fortunate. This whole entire experience from the beginning of the writing of Bengal Tiger through the Broadway production, that it had the life that it had, and that, you know, it was able to kind of move me into, you know, a different level in terms of jobs that I could get. But as a playwright, it's really just about writing the next play, and hopefully people like it.
One of the actresses in the film, Robert, says that every word is written for a reason, and we're looked at. We look at a point where she's, the way she says is becomes important. I would imagine that's true of putting together a film as well. And Rajiv, I want to talk to you about every word being important. But every scene, everything that's in the film is an important part of it. There's a lot that you probably just discard, right?
I'm sorry, I missed the... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Robert, and then we'll go to Rajiv.
Okay.
Again, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier the difference to PBS saying, aha, we see what you're doing, and aha, you've gotten there. I think it's a tremendous balancing act, and there are, I don't know, 900 shots in this film, and I think if you shorten one too much, you affect something later on.
Mm.
Putting this film together was, in a sense, it became as detail-oriented, I would imagine, not being a playwright, as the length of a scene or the length of a monologue or the interchange of two characters involved in a delicate moment in a play. That's why God created film editors and took that responsibility out of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
I think at a certain point I became very involved in the editing, mostly in the beginning and then at the very end, and, you know, clearly involved all the way through, but... you know, we split our responsibilities up, and a film editor really is an integral, critical part of a film production that finally tunes everything and gives you the best possible disciplined film that you can get in ways that a director ordinarily can't deliver just because we get a little too close to the material, which is amazing that playwrights are able to write plays. But then again, Rajiv, you've got the dramaturg.
And who is the dramaturg? We only have about 20 seconds left, Rajiv.
The dramaturg for Bengal Tiger was a man named Piercarlo Talenti, who is the head dramaturg at Center Theater Group in Los Angeles. And he's the kind of guy that sits there, you know, with you and kind of goes over any new changes and gives you an outside perspective on, you know, on what you're writing and kind of is a great sounding board for a writer.
Thank you both so much for being with us. I hope you have a big audience.
Can I add one thought?
Sure, go ahead.
And I had my own kind of dramaturg, a producer named Rebecca Hallbauer, who is somebody who's so completely in tune with the material that she's the secret weapon that comes in at the very end of the project and basically weighs in on everybody's work and points
right.
out weaknesses and strengths.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Playwright From Page to Stage, Monday night on PBS. Check your listings. Thanks to KP Whaley.